Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Nothing Impossible on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Well, take a deep breath as we get into this edition of Nothing Impossible. Michael Calhoun.
Hold that breath. Hold that breath. Let it out slowly. Travis Sheridan, also in studio.
So as you can tell, we've got a few topics coming up on the show. First off, we're going to talk about geospatial technology, and then we're going to talk about the intersection of blockchain and cannabis.
I don't know how we're segueing from a Jesuit university to blockchain and cannabis, but we can make it work on this show.
What even is blockchain? I don't think I understand still. Oh, it's got something to do with Bitcoin, maybe?
You didn't ask what is cannabis, so that makes me even more suspicious.
I think people are familiar with that these days. It's Missouri just legalized medicinal marijuana. It may become legal on the recreational side just across the border in Illinois, but the banks don't want anything to do with it.
I wonder if there's parallels to early alcohol sales, right? And this is, you know, a sin tax or whatever you want to call it, right? These banks just really shutting down businesses that are, maybe less desirable.
But they're afraid the feds are going to come in and shut them down for supporting illegal trade.
But we have this this platform of blockchain that could work in increasing transparency and maybe give the banks and financial institutions a little bit more comfort.
And it's from a St. Louis area startup, too.
Gotta love it.
And so we'll find out, first off, not just the cannabis companies themselves, the one that have marijuana in their possession, get kicked out of the banking system, but this guy, who's just working on support systems in the financial system
tech
for the
company.
Industry.
Just a tech company.
He got kicked out, too. No bank for you.
No bank for you. And speaking of getting kicked out, you know, St. Louis has a big problem with kids getting kicked out of school. Our suspension rate is really high. And there's an organization or a program through Venture Cafe called EdHub, which is trying to address some of the greatest challenges in education through innovative solutions. And I had a chance to interview the manager of that program, plus the executive director of the foundation that's helping fund it.
EdHub is really, I mean, there's innovation that can be put into place, really, in anything that you can think about. And education is an area where we've just been doing the same thing.
It seems broken, over and over again. We may need
an innovative
solution.
There's so much new technology, so many people with new ideas.
Right.
And so I'll be interested to hear that conversation. Always love Venture Cafe, getting a taste of that too. And we're going to talk about, as mentioned at the top, geospatial technology. If you've ever used a digital map, you've used geospatial technology in its most basic form, but St. Louis is becoming a hub for this stuff, and not just because of the federal spy agency setting up shop here.
No, we are going to talk to Ken Olaf from St. Louis University, Vice President of Research, and look at the ways that our academic institutions are partnering with the National Geospatial Agency.
Yeah, but right now, let's get right to something I think that excited some folks in St. Louis this week, the prospect of the NBA professional basketball in St. Louis. The billionaire Richard Chaffetz, Chaffetz Arena, ring a bell, says in the Business Journal that he would love to be a part of an ownership group for the NBA and that he would love to see it in St. Louis. He thinks the market could support it. Is that true, though?
It would be interesting to see. I mean, don't know a lot of my St. Louis history. I'm sorry, St. Louisans, but I do know we used to have an NBA team here. Atlanta Hawks were here. And
Bobby Costas did the play-by-play for the Spirits on KMOX.
That's so crazy to think about. And we have a large African-American population. The NBA does have a big fan base from the Black community. Can this be a sport that helps really rally and provide entertainment to our Black community here?
So let's find out if this is even something that we could have here in St. Louis, if there's a team that's for sale or if there's an expansion process that the league is looking at. Patrick Risch of Washington University in St. Louis runs the sports business program there. And Pat,
are they expanding or are there teams that are looking to leave their current cities or is this a pipe dream?
Well, I certainly appreciate Mr. Chaffetz's energy and enthusiasm. And as a sports enthusiast, I would love to have professional basketball in St. Louis. Of course, at WashU, we have this great relationship with Joe Lacob and the Golden State Warriors, he's the benefactor of our program. That all said, I do think it's a bit of a pipe dream, and here's why. First of all, currently the NBA isn't necessarily looking at expansion. The Seattle and Vegas would certainly be the next cities on deck. St. Louis would not rank close to those cities.
So that's from an expansion standpoint. What about something that's owner-driven? If Richard Chaffetz or a team of, maybe he even gets involved with the Blues ownership since they've got Enterprise, and they buy a team in a city and say, we're going to move it. What about that?
Well, to be honest, I think that the best opportunity, quite frankly, is if St. Louis were to ever consider the possibility of a G League franchise, and if the G League decided to expand, because quite frankly, the G League is gaining in popularity and stature. So, and on top of that, it's possible that a G League franchise could exist in an arena like the existing Chaffetz Arena. I just think it's unlikely. If you look at the markets that are out there, probably one of the weakest performing markets would be Memphis. But, you know, do I see a transaction where he's purchasing the Grizzlies and moving them to St. Louis? You know, I really don't. Because, again, you have to consider the market size. We're a market that is, again, around 20th in terms of metropolitan statistical area. And ultimately, now that we've got obviously hockey, obviously baseball, I think there's a really strong chance we're going to have Major League Soccer, and then add to that the XFL. So now you're talking about potentially four markets, and then you want to add a major, or a NBA team, or I think that's a stretch. I do think the G League is much more digestible.
Now, Vegas is, in terms of Nielsen markets, 42, and St. Louis is 21. And they've already got the NFL, the biggest league, apparently going there with the Raiders, and the NHL now, too. So doesn't that put them in the same position as St. Louis? Now they have the tourism factor, but it is a smaller market.
Well, you know, basketball, just the dynamics of the sport is more kind of fast-paced and energetic and sexy, which, of course, is kind of consistent with the Vegas demeanor. And I do think that that's something that would be kind of eye-catching for tourists. You know, obviously now that the NBA, probably more so than any other sports league, is really kind of embracing this idea of the legalization of gambling, well, obviously that would make a lot of sense. And I think you may be underestimating that even though it's a smaller market, that there is a lot of you know, disposable income among certain groups in the community. So ultimately, I think when you can add all of those things up, it really does make Vegas. Again, I'd rank Seattle ahead of Vegas, but I would rank Vegas certainly above St. Louis.
All right, that's Patrick Risch of the Sports Business Program at Washington University. Coming up next, we're going to check out EdHub.
We'll be back. Stick around.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on Gangnam OX.
All right, Travis Sheridan with Nothing Impossible on location out at the EdHub event, which is in Innovation Hall. And I'm here with the manager of the EdHub, Sharita Love, and also Dr. Sarah Chung, who is the executive director of SkipNV. We'll learn a little bit more about both of those things. But Sharita, what is EdHub and what are we doing here tonight?
Oh, EdHub is a platform for educators, no matter what that means to you, whether you be a parent, community member, concerned citizen, to come together and connect over what's best for kids. It's a physical space at Innovation Hall, but then also an intellectual space where we keep thinking about what we can do, what we can reimagine so that kids benefit most.
And how's this tied to innovation? I mean, is it about iPads in schools and 3D printers?
Some of that, but not just that. It is about the way we think, the way we be with one another when it comes to conversations that matter in education. We know that, I always say this, we know that in St. Louis, we have issues, right? But this is not specific to St. Louis. Our silos keep us disconnected. Our conversations sometimes keep us disconnected. But what would be possible if we removed all those labels, titles, who we are, where we live, and really just think about kids? Kids at the center of all of our stuff. That's the innovation that we want to look for.
Kids at the center of all our stuff. That sounds familiar. Like,
it does.
Where have I heard that before?
You are so good. You are so good. You have heard the term or the phrase youth at the center.
Yeah.
And youth at the center is something that or some verbiage that was pulled from the Ford through Ferguson report, where one of the recommendations for St. Louis and our region to look at equitable outcomes, not just for kids, but for our region, is to keep youth at the center. EdHub exists in part because we looked at the recommendation to create a space for educators to come together and do just what we're doing tonight. Have conversation, go into a session and learn something different and new, and then hopefully walk away with a partner in this work. So that's what we're hoping.
So they're not doing it alone. And I would imagine, like, educators go to conferences all the time, but they probably don't go to things like this. So to give us a little picture of what's going on here tonight specifically.
Sure. So tonight we have, we have alcohol. So generally we don't get alcohol at our
Children at the center. Let's just remember that.
That's right. That's how.
Take yourself first.
Absolutely.
Care of yourself first.
Yes. So there's drinks. There's food. Mm-hmm. There are sessions that are happening. We have about 6 sessions that are happening around equity in education, parent organizing, and what that looks like. We have a session around wellness and self-care for educators. We have a session around technology and social services impact. So how do we look at technologies that are out there that assist and support education and kids in our region? And then we have a panel with school leaders from across the region to talk about how do we look at ways to remove barriers to learning through social services that are offered within schools.
And I'd like to add.
But let me introduce before you jump in here. I want to come over to you, Dr. Sarah Chung. Can I call you Sarah from now on?
You can call me Sarah.
At least for a few minutes. So you're the executive director of EdHub, but you wanted to add something to what Sharita just said also.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you asked what the difference is between this and a typical conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say the difference is not that we're just talking down or there's an expert in the front of the room telling what they know, but that it's a bi-directional conversation, that we're really just sharing what we all collectively know so that we can have ideas that maybe spark new initiatives and or different ways to serve kids. So I like the bi-directional feel. I think that's something that's really important to us when we designed it, because I think we all know that we have blind spots. We have things that we need to share with one another so we can do better.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that not one person has all the answers, but collectively we're a lot closer. Is that true?
Will it be? I don't know.
It's
a big experiment, right?
Yeah.
Like, we hope that it will be. I think one thing we keep saying is that this is not a space that is prescriptive. It's a space that we hope that the people who come to attend these events will actually design and make their own. So already people are saying, you know, oh, I'm going to go talk to so-and-so over there because they look alone. So that's great.
Yeah.
That's what we want. We want this to be their space, their hangout.
Well, I mean, are educators comfortable with that? I mean, I would think that they want a little bit more structure, right? A little more pedagogy as to how this, you know, I'm supposed to interact this way. So what's this, like, free flow? How do the educators align with this or deal with this?
We'll see. I was just talking to a friend of mine. I'm being honest. Like, I was just talking to a friend of mine who just retired. Mm-hmm. She was a librarian, and I think she taught third grade for, like, 30 years or something like that. And she is a regular at Venture Cafe St. Louis and very active in, like, STEM education in St. Louis. And so she came in. She's like, do I check in like I do at Venture Cafe? And then she kind of stood there for a minute. And she's like, oh, I get it. She's like, I get it. This is Venture Cafe for us, for educators. So we're supposed to, okay, I get it. So, yeah, I think it may take a while for some. It may be natural for some, but we'll see. We'll see what this looks like.
I think that's the point, right?
Yeah.
So someone once likened chaos, right? You talk to some organizations and they're like, there's no structure. We don't know what we're doing. And that's chaotic
to
me.
We have to learn it.
But then another person who sees kind of the other aspect of chaos, they described it like jazz.
Mm.
Like sometimes there's a melody and you can pipe in and play that note with them, or you sit out for that part and then pipe in with another note. So I don't know jazz, so I'm just making that illusion. But it made sense to
sounded
me at the
legitimate.
Time.
It sounded
really good, and so I just wanted to use it in this soundbite. But I think that's what it is. You know, you make it your space.
Yeah.
The breakouts are really just breakouts. If you want to go for all of it, you go for all of it. But if you want to stand and talk to someone because you're having a really good connection with someone you've never met, then you do that, and it's not prescriptive. So yes, it's probably going to be painful.
So you don't have to sit in your chair or your desk until the bell rings, and then you can get up. If If you're bored, you can just get up and walk out.
Go.
Or if you show up late, you're not going to be in trouble. You can join in.
That's right. I think that's the whole point, is we want to be as flexible as possible with some structure. There's definitely structure. You know, there's time frames and rooms to listen to certain things. But yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Skip NV and how you're connected to all this craziness,
this chaos, this jazz. We love organized chaos at Skip NV. So we're really new. You know, we've only been around for a year and a half, and we were really kind of set up as a group to think about what are the ways in which we can add value through a systems lens. So a lot of times we create a lot of initiatives in the social space that come and feedback onto itself and make things worse over time. Mm. And so my training is in system dynamics. It's about understanding those types of effects and mitigating for unintended consequences. And so we kind of got in this space thinking, how do we work in education? What are some of the barriers? What are some of the things that maybe aren't being talked about or funded? And one of the things that we heard educators say is, you know, there's lots of good things happening. It's just that we don't know about it. We don't know how to get our hands on it. Or it doesn't work in our context, but it might work in this other way. So people wanted a space and place to do this. Forward Through Ferguson had their recommendation about youth at the center. We were kind of in a space where we were trying to figure out how to be helpful, and kind of met Sherita through her podcast, which is fun. Just kind of listening to her as a thought leader, and then realizing that she worked for Venture Cafe, attended some Venture Cafes, got really excited about what they were doing, and it just all made sense. So I'm really excited that we can offer this for the education community. I think this is unique in the sense that a lot of times, I just talk to a lot of nonprofit people too, we scrap by. We have the lowest minimal resources, and we are just constantly just fighting for more. But this is one place where I hope that people can be free to do what they need to do.
Mm-hmm. The vibe I get here, and maybe it's just because I'm standing next to all the energy.
I'm literally about to cry.
I know. But good. We'll cry together. There is this feeling of hopefulness and abundance that I see here from these participants. You were mentioning scraping by, and we all hear I won't call them the horror stories, they're the true stories of teachers taking money out of their own pockets to make sure they have supplies for their kids, or helping kids, you know, with clothing or hygiene or adopting them. But this seems like this is a community of educators that are all pushing that same rock up the same hill at the same time, knowing that it's going to slip every day. How does that, other than crying, Sherita? How does this make you feel that you get to do this for your living? This is your thing.
I don't have words. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, what Sarah was just speaking to, just the, you know, fact that this is so perfectly aligned with what I consider my ethos.
Yeah.
I can't even speak to it.
Okay, so I'll let you off the hot seat, but one last question. If people wanted to learn more about EdHub, where do they go?
Well, they can go to our website. We're all over Venture Cafe St. Louis. We're at innovationhall.org. And they can also reach out to me. My email. And they can find me.
No, don't worry about email. That's way too complex. All right, so Sherita Love and Dr. Sarah Chung, thank you so much for joining for this. And it will. I'm going to go enjoy all this. I'm going to go hang out with those abundant people over there.
That's right.
I'm excited.
We'll be back more after this.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on Kangam OX.
All right, well, there's things that people know about and things that people don't know about. People probably know about cannabis. People probably don't know a lot about blockchain.
They've heard about Bitcoin. One of the applications of that technology.
Right, and so we're going to bring them together and have a discussion.
Yeah, let's bring in Jay Lindberg, who is the founder of Missouri-based The Kangea Project, joining us on Nothing Impossible. Thanks for calling in, Jay.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on. How you guys doing?
Doing great. So before we get to the cannabis side of things, just as a quick primer for our audience, tell us a little bit about blockchain.
Sure. So the blockchain is a somewhat newer technology. It provides a lot more transparency and security than the traditional and current applications. So it provides a lot of stability and security to the financial space.
Yeah, we've heard, like I just said, I think the Bitcoin application is what people are most familiar with. But, I mean, everything from healthcare to retail, all sorts of different applications of this have been talked about. How do you describe, I guess, this blockchain? I don't even know where to begin because it's a new approach that is sometimes hard to wrap your mind around, I think.
Sure. When people hear blockchain, most people first think about Bitcoin and they think about cryptocurrency. You know, blockchain is a lot more than just cryptocurrency. There's a lot more application and use case for it. So like you mentioned, insurance industry, supply chain industry, in the real estate industry, and most importantly, just in the financial space. So there's a lot of use case for it, and the world and, you know, people in general are still becoming privy to that.
Well, I know that there was a lot of discussion back shortly after the financial crisis. People were saying that if blockchain existed and was stronger, more widely accepted and adopted, then maybe the financial crisis may not have happened. And that's mostly because we could have tracked these bad loans, these shoddy products that investors were put together. Tell us about the cannabis application to blockchain and crypto blockchain.
Sure. So, well, to touch on what you just mentioned is that there was a lack of transparency there, right? So a lot of money was missing or, you know, was unaccounted for. So what Kanji is doing is bringing transparency to the blockchain and to cryptocurrency and to the cannabis industry. You know, cannabis is starting to become legal in many places, you know, over 33 states in the United States, but it's still illegal on a federal level. So due to that, federally chartered banks are unable to service the cannabis-based businesses. So although it's legal in multiple states, everyone is still operating in a cash industry. So it's a cash economy.
Yeah, we've seen, I think, Canada being the one country in North America that's totally legalized it. It seems like a lot of the businesses, especially those who want to be publicly traded and want to hook into the banking system, are making their way to Canada. And so where does that leave? I guess you've got Canada, then you've got the states where it's legal, like Colorado, Oregon, Washington, California now. And then you've got the states like Missouri and Missouri soon and Illinois, where it's medicinal, and that's a whole other level. And so why base your company in Missouri as opposed to these other states in this country or even going to Canada?
Well, so our LLC is actually based in Delaware. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in Missouri. I live in St. Louis. This is where I'm from. So this is kind of where, you know, our office is headquartered. However, you know, our partners are in California. They're in Denver. You know, we're all over the United States. So we're focused on a global industry. You know, as you mentioned, Canada, Uruguay, the country Colombia, you know, there's a global industry forming, and we're focused on creating a standardization for not just all these different states, but all the different countries. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I guess what you were saying earlier, financial institutions just are not, it's just too high risk of a business, right? So they're not allowing any sort of transactions through traditional means.
Right. And even international banks, you know, they're refusing to service those cannabis businesses in other countries because those banks are at risk of the United States banks severing ties with them. So a lot of this has to do with it being illegal on a federal level and due to FinCEN regulations, anti-money laundering laws. So they want to ensure that any penny and all this money that would come through isn't illegal money. It didn't come from the black market. So that's where the transparency comes in. And what we've created is a platform that would allow the banks to actually monitor and track all of the transactions that a cannabis-related company that they open account for would be doing to ensure that all those transactions are done between other licensed cannabis businesses and medical marijuana cardholders. So we're using technology to try to bring more transparency to this industry.
So what is the stage of your company now?
So our application is fully functioning, and right now we are in talks with lobbyists and legislators trying to get in front of the decision makers to present what we have and to show them that, you know, we have a solution for a lot of the problems that they're facing. You know, our platform, what it would also allow is for the real-time payment of sales tax. So instead of the companies, these businesses driving duffel bags of cash across the state to go pay sales tax, our platform would actually, using the blockchain, would allow the government to collect their sales tax in real time each time someone made a purchase at a dispensary.
And you talk about businesses getting kicked out of the banking industry, so to speak. You've got your own experience with this when it comes to a local bank in the St. Louis area?
Absolutely. You know, and it's nothing new to us. Like I said, that's the reason that we founded this project. You know, we've seen companies that don't even that don't even touch the plant. They just service the industry, face problems. And that's exactly what we're facing here. So we set up just a simple operating account at First State Bank in St. Charles. Within a month, they sent us a letter terminating our account because we service the cannabis industry.
Now, you don't deal with, I can imagine, a dispensary, for instance, and they've got actual marijuana on their hands and a bank being uncomfortable with that. But you don't actually deal with the Cangia Project. We're talking with Jay Lindberg, who's the founder. You don't actually deal with marijuana or cannabis physically, do you? And yet the bank still said, we don't want to be associated with you.
Yeah, no, we do not touch cannabis at all. We do not. We're not affiliated with the plant. We're a technology company that provides solutions for the cannabis industry, as well as banking institutions and the government. But the fact that we service the cannabis industry was just a flag to terminate our banking relationship.
Take this forward, you know, 2 to 5 years. Where do you see your company? Where do you see this industry? And what role does blockchain play in that?
Sure. So, you know, I see more of a global industry forming. Canada, you know, it's legal nationwide there. They're set up to export cannabis to different countries. So what I see is we're going to play a major role in facilitating those global transactions. You know, different buyers in different parts of the world where there's different currencies. It's a very complex situation, especially considering most banks won't service them. So how can you facilitate a transaction from Canada to Uruguay if the banks don't want to be involved? Well, the Cangia platform and cryptocurrency would allow for that type of sophisticated financial transaction to take place all on the blockchain. So it's fully transparent and secure. That's where I see it on a global scale. Here nationwide, I see more states legalized. I still don't think that we'll be legalized on a federal level, but I definitely see the industry booming.
Jay Lindberg, founder of the Missouri-based Cangia Project. And where can people go to get more information, Jay?
They can go to our website. It's cangia.com, C-A-N-G-E-A.com.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll be back right after this on Nothing Impossible.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on KingMOX.
Welcome back. Michael Calhoun and Travis Sheridan with you. And we want to get the scoop on what's happening with geospatial technology in St. Louis. We've told you about some of the pieces of what's happening, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, this huge federal spy agency setting up here, companies like Boundless moving to St. Louis. And there's an educational academic aspect to this as well.
Yeah, so we're joined by Ken Olaf from St. Louis University. Ken, can you tell us the SLU connection to the NGA? And thanks so much for joining us, by the way.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. So St. Louis University has a long connection relationship with the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. As you know, the NGA has two campuses. One of them is here in St. Louis. And so the relationship with the NGA and SLU goes back good number of years. We started with collaborating with the NGA around work we were doing on unmanned aerial vehicles or drones and ways that you can put various kinds of sensing technologies on drones. And we have now just in the last month or two, we have signed a new collaborative research and development agreement for a much expanded partnership around research, education, and innovation with the NGA.
And Ken, How do you describe what geospatial means for folks who are coming into this and maybe their brush with it might be thinking, all right, so I use Waze to get around, you know, thinking of straight maps and how they use those in their daily lives. But geospatial, why is it so important and how pervasive in our lives is it going to become?
Fantastic question. So geospatial is essentially using technology to understand the world. So as you said, anyone who has used Waze or Google Maps to navigate by car is using geospatial technologies. So geospatial includes a whole variety of different technologies. GIS or geographic information systems is one of them, but there's also, as we've mentioned, drones, something called LIDAR, satellites. It's essentially any kind of technology that is used to understand what's happening on the world in real time. And then you can imagine that this can be used for a whole variety of different purposes.
Now, when I think of the campus that's being built, the NGA campus that's being built, and the number of jobs that are being created and that will operate out of there, is part of the reason in connecting to St. Louis University for has that have to do with workforce, or is it also to connect with the researchers to discover what hasn't yet been discovered?
It's both, and I'm glad you point out, because both are critically important. So as you can imagine, the geospatial field changes very rapidly. Technology has really transformed it over the last decade or so. And so one of the issues is for the geospatial industry, companies around which are working in geospatial, as well as the NGA, the need for talent in a rapidly evolving area is incredibly important. And so SLU has been providing that kind of talent for the last number of years, but we're significantly ramping up our efforts with this new GeoSLU initiative that we'll describe to you.
We're talking
then,
with...
As you mentioned...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There is also a very important research component to it. So St. Louis University has expertise really across the university that are using geospatial tools to understand problems that the world faces here in St. Louis and then globally.
We're talking with Ken Olive, who's Vice President for Research at St. Louis University. And if people are interested, you mentioned talent is a huge aspect of this. If people are interested in getting into this industry, what are the skills they need? What route should they take? Where should they go at SLU? Is this something you should start with as an undergrad? Or if people are looking to change careers, how do people get into this, I guess?
Many points of entry. So the training happens at all different levels. From high school kids who are coming into college and thinking about data science, computer science, earth and atmospheric sciences is a potential area. We provide those kinds of training opportunities, as well as graduate programs for more advanced skills. And then through our School of Professional Studies in particular, we have a whole variety of different training options for people who are retooling their career, either because they want to change careers or if they just want to get new skills to keep up with technology.
Ken, can you talk a little bit about some of the research that goes on at St. Louis University that directly applies to geospatial?
Yeah, absolutely. So GeoSLU is an initiative that we started through a big ideas competition at the university. Our goal is to become the world's leading Jesuit research university. And as part of that, we are defining a set of very distinct strengths that we can build upon to become one of the top programs in the country. So we've identified geospatial as one of those areas, and it's really building on strengths that we already have and enhancing and accelerating them. So for instance, through our School of Medicine, our School of Public Health, and Health Sciences, we do work around understanding health disparities. We're now using geospatial tools to understand the distribution of health disparities, for instance, in the city of St. Louis and in the region. Geography is a very important predictor of the kinds of health challenges that individuals face. Another example would be using geospatial tools to understand the way that regional conflict around the world happens. So if you can understand what's happening with water and what's happening with disease, you have a very good predictor of understanding and predicting regional instability.
Where would you say, Ken, geospatial technology is in the timeline of its life? Are we in the beginning stages of this technology becoming pervasive, becoming a huge industry. You know, just like maybe around the turn of the century, St. Louis began an initiative to become a plant and bioscience hub, and now we're seeing the fruits of that a couple of decades later. Do you think that we're just getting in on the ground floor of geospatial and that it's really about to blow up and this is the perfect time to get in on it?
I think that that's the right analogy. I think that we're not at the ground floor in the sense that the foundation is already there. We have great companies here in St. Louis. You know, Ameren is using geospatial, Monsanto, now Bayer, Boundless, Esri, Enterprise, Worldwide Technologies. But it's just exploding now. If you think about, if you can understand what's happening in real time around the world, how can you use that for a whole variety of different purposes, for industry, for solving problems, and so on? I think there's a huge potential for the St. Louis region to establish itself as one of the leading destinations for geospatial research, education, innovation. But I think the opportunity is in front of us, and we absolutely have to grab it.
Well, one of the things that I think I'm most excited about as I see all these pieces coming together is it's not just a spy agency that's going to be in St. Louis. It's a partnership with St. Louis University. It's the partnerships that have been fostered with T-Rex, the downtown incubator, and the creation of an industry cluster there around geospatial to really fuel the next generation of innovators and entrepreneurs working in this space. We already have a cybersecurity accelerator program through the 630 organization and company.
Ameren Accelerator is invested in geospatial too.
Ameren Accelerator as well. So Ken, as you're seeing, like as you're at that 30,000 foot view, what pieces are still missing?
That's a great question. I think we need to attract more companies to St. Louis. I think that's an important piece of it. Across a variety of different industry sectors, geospatial tools are now becoming a resource for companies that would not have been considered such before. And so I think reaching out to those companies and those innovators and convincing them and conveying to them that St. Louis is the place to be, really building a critical mass. I think we also need to be focused on recruiting great researchers and scientists to the area as well. And again, I think if we can, we need to build that critical mass of when we at St. Louis University are recruiting the best and brightest faculty, that they want to come here because they want to be part of what's happening here in St. Louis. And then the collaborators that they can get with our other industry, with our university partners, with our industry partners, and with startups. It's a little bit trite to say it, but it really has to be an ecosystem.
Well, I can just imagine we're going to get to that day, just like if you see the spy shows and like, get me Langley on the phone because they want to talk to the FBI or something. Now it's going to be, get me St. Louis, and it's going to be about the spy spy agency here.
I like it.
Go internal GPS.
Yeah. It's important to remember, though, that the NGA is part of the Department of Defense, but it actually has a broader mission, including disaster preparedness around the world. So, for instance, with various natural disasters and hurricanes and so on, it's the NGA that's providing the background maps and information that's helping with rescue efforts.
And we've seen with NGA, like with a lot of federal agencies and defense agencies, technologies that are developed there and make their way to the private sector and maybe become even more successful once they're in the private sector than they were when they were developed in the military.
Absolutely. And that's a really important piece of where the NGA is going, as I understand it, that because they're working in this space that's changing so rapidly, that they are really needing to open up and engage with innovators, engage with industry, engage with academia, because great ideas come from anywhere. And then also to show that the work that's coming out of the NGA has application across many different sectors of the economy.
Ken Olive, Vice President for Research at St. Louis University. Thank you for joining us and giving us the scoop on geospatial and the impact it's having on St. Louis.
My pleasure. If I can mention one other thing.
Sure.
So you mentioned at the beginning, what is this geospatial thing? Mm-hmm. So at St. Louis University, we're taking our public outreach seriously. And in February and March, we're going to be doing a series called Geospatial 101 for the St. Louis community. And So stay tuned for information about those dates, but it'll basically be what do you need to know about geospatial and why does it matter in St. Louis?
And when it's and time then, to attend, where can they get more information?
Please go to SLU's website, SLU Research. So SLU.edu/research.
And use your favorite mapping application to get directions to the site.
Absolutely.
Ken, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right, and thank you for joining us on another week of Nothing Impossible. Take care.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.